I am Platon on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Guillaume Cote joins me now, the celebrated ballet dancer and choreographer. Will be coming to town the 18th to the 21st of March with the BC premiere of Hamlet, Prince of Denmark, which he's choreographed and will star in. Created by Cote and director Robert Lepage, the full-length production explores the Shakespeare works' themes of power, betrayal, and inner turmoil through movement, evocative lighting, and minimal set design. And the reviews have been quite good wherever the show's played. A number have pointed out the timeliness of the piece, and I'll ask Guillaume about the relevance of Hamlet today. This is a production of Ex Machina and Cote Danse at the Vancouver Playhouse. Guillaume Cote retired from the National Ballet of Canada in the spring of 2025 after being a principal dancer there since 2004 and joining the company in 1998. He was educated at Canada's National Ballet School, and in his long career has been a guest performer at various companies around the world, including Teatro alla Scala, English National Ballet, the Royal Ballet, and American Ballet Theatre, among many others. In 2021, he was named Chevalier de l'Ordre National du Québec. Visit dancehouse.ca for tickets and information. We spoke 1 week ago with Guillaume in between performances of Hamlet at the National Arts Centre in Ottawa. Please welcome to the Planton Light program, Guillaume Cote. Monsieur Cote, good morning.
Good morning.
I guess it's good afternoon in Ottawa where you are today.
It is.
I've caught you just before, I guess a few hours before you go on stage. What is your day like prior to a performance? Did you manage to find time for rest on the sword? Or?
It depends on sort of like the day in the setup, because essentially we have a touring show. Hamlet is kind of a touring show where we've toured extensively across the U.S. and Canada, and often we'll do, you know, only two performances. So if it's the first show, usually we have to tech the entire performance during the day, so It's a very long day. So we'll start around 10 a.m., warming up and everything, and then we're sort of on stage from 12 to 4 o'clock, just teching and doing all the lighting and everything, and all the dancers have to be present, because the show is actually so dependent on dancers, because we sort of move the scenery and all the sort of the scene changes happen with us.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be there, and then, yeah, then we sort of had a little break, maybe like a 2 hour before we sort of have to warm up again. But it makes for a really long day. On a day like today, though, we had a big show yesterday at the NAC, and but today we had the day off and we start at 5. So, yeah, so today is a little bit more chill.
And I understand that in Vancouver, they've added a couple more performances, is that right?
Yeah, they have. They've added some shows, so we're really happy to see that the show seems to be popular enough that they are doing that. So, and you know, I haven't personally been to Vancouver in a really long time. I was with the National Ballet of Canada for many years. And the National Ballet used to go every 2 years. We used to go to Vancouver, and it was one of the highlights of my year was to make it out there and on Western tour. So I haven't been there in, I don't know, something like 10 years or something. So, yeah, so I'm really happy to be dancing a few more times in Vancouver.
Can you tell when you're on stage performing, whether audiences are different city by city?
You mean whether people are on their phones? No, I'm kidding. We can see the light, people. Turn off your phones.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. But I'm not. You are really in a different place every time, and it's very much a different audience. It's funny because we've also, because Hamlet is also a show that was popular in these university theaters as well in the States, we'd have sort of like these young audiences who were like super like treating it as if it was a rock show. like in between the scenes, kind of, you know, really being very involved with us and kind of clapping and laughing out loud and things like that. And then we've been, you know, in places like the National Arts Center where it's incredibly respectful and very different vibe. So, yes, so everywhere we go seems to be a different reaction. But the really wonderful thing is that, you know, we see that the show has different moments that seem to please the different types of audience.
And if the audience is with you, if you know that they're, you know, that they're invested in the story, in everything that you all are doing on the stage, that energy, do you feel that at all?
Absolutely. Listen, the show is it's an hour and 45 minutes. It's a different type of show. It's a theater dance hybrid. It starts off in because we sort of go scene to scene with Hamlet, we just starts off relatively slow. You know, the character development has to happen slowly because people have to get to know who's who and how. And you can tell, maybe the first 15 minutes, you can tell people are coughing and people are sort of shifting in their seat. But usually around minute 20 and 40, you feel that the audience stops making noise and is completely kind of focused in a different way. And then by the end, usually you can hear a pin drop, like people seem to be really into the action in a whole different way. But you feel that if sometimes the pacing of our show is really key as well, with lighting and with sets and scenery and changes. And because it is live performance, sometimes, you know, a curtain stops working and we have to stop and, you know, and then sort of take a pause and fix things. Of course, the flow of the show is truly important. So then from that point on, it's really hard to get people to believe in our journey, you know, again, and sort of dive back into this journey. But it's interesting because our audience is really, it's a long burn. It's a slow burn, as they say. Mm-hmm. So the show is a show that the audience kind of comes in, and it's not one of those Broadway shows where there's like the wow number after, you know, 3 minutes and then you keep getting these wow moments. Like, the show is a slow burn that really tells a story and that really gives back at the end when you sort of come on this journey with us.
How did this adaptation of Hamlet come about? Now, you've worked with Robert Lepage before. Whose idea was it? Did you both come up with the idea of doing this as the next project, say?
You know, I'd seen a one-man Hamlet by Robert called Elsinore a few years before even meeting Robert. And then I started working with Robert on a project with the National Ballet, and we worked on that for a long time. And during that time, I decided that I would sort of go to him and ask him if he would willing to develop a Hamlet in dance. You know, Hamlet is a piece that hasn't been that much explored through movement and through dance. And when it has, it's been tough to find a successful way to do it. It's a cerebral piece of Shakespeare. It's not so much visceral, and the visceral and, you know, things like love and, you know, and drama really go beautifully with dance. And this one is more, Hamlet is more of an intellectual piece. It's more of it's about corruption and politics and, you know, and this idea of truth. And those are hard things to, you know, deliver through dance. So Rabai was, rightly so, you know, slightly nervous about doing it through dance, but I ended up convincing him because I thought, you know, this would be a beautiful proposition to do this thing in this most simplest way, which is, you know, kind of taking away the words and stripping it away from the words and seeing how the structure of the play is incredibly strong in itself without the sort of the poetry of the words, and that it, you know, because the play is strong, and the reason why one of the main reasons why the play is strong, in my opinion, is that, and also in Rabat's opinion, is that the play is an action play, and also it's not just because there were really beautiful soliloquies written, it's because the play in itself is very structured in a way that is conducive to situations, reactions, timing, emotions in different ways. So stripping it from words was a tough challenge, and we started workshopping it, and Rabat starts workshops sometimes saying, this is not a show yet. Like, we don't know if we're signing up to develop a show. We're workshopping, and this may fall through. You know, and so it was like a kind of a few weeks of work where we didn't know if we were going to move forward with this as a full-on show. And then, you know, after a few experiments and sort of, you know, us trying things and finding the right characters and finding sort of a few key moments of the story, we were like, okay, I think we should embark on this more deeply.
What's he like to work with as a collaborator? I mean, is he receptive to other people's ideas?
He's a crafter of ideas. So he not only is receptive, he needs them. He's a person who needs all ideas, and he empowers everybody in that room to give ideas because he likes ideas. He takes the ideas, and he works with the ideas. He's not the person who comes in, and he always will say, you know, that's the one thing. He says this beautiful thing about creativity, which is, you know, he's like, it's kind of like we're going on a, you know, we're sort of like the great, you know, the people who sort of discovered America would sort of get onto this boat and then, you know, and then kind of go on this journey. And there was sort of like a captain of the boat. And at some point, you know, the captain would say, I think we should head that way. And then they sort of end up in this void. And then eventually somebody will see, you know, a continent in the distance, and slowly they would say, okay, let's sort of head towards that. And then slowly the continent appears in the, you know, in the distance as you kind of get closer and you steer the boat towards a certain direction. And I thought that was kind of a nice sort of analogy to creativity and Robert, because he's definitely the captain of the ship. He sort of holds the direction and wants to make sure that he steers all the creatives towards this sort of, you know, this discovery and this thing that we are heading towards. But he's in no way the person who comes in and says, here's what I'm going to make, here's what I want to build, please serve my vision. He's absolutely not that. He's definitely like, throw all the ideas, show me everybody what we can do and how we can do it. And that's why we've worked so well together, because I propose a lot of choreographic ideas, a lot of conceptual ideas. I'm a person who loves different approaches, different ideas, different vantage points. And then so I propose all these different things. And then he is Mr. Structure. He, you know, he's very good in his simplicity, because I would come with these ideas of, you know, these abstract representations of Hamlet's psychology and ghosts of his father, you know, like kind of haunting him. And then Robert would, you know, blatantly just go, but where does this go? Like, why? How are people going to know who's who? Why are we doing this in dance, though? Like, there's so many, then we can just make an abstract dance piece. Like, if we're doing Hamlet in dance, let's do Hamlet. So he had this beautiful simplicity of direction where he would say, well, let's then take it scene by scene, tell the story exactly the way that the story is supposed to be told, just without the words. And this is going to be the proposition. Honor the proposition to its fullest. And I thought that was such a great way of directing it, because often in this day and age, also people get the abyss of possibilities through everything we see through Instagram and everything. Mm-hmm. Like we see it, all these crazy things on our algorithms, these amazing productions with these incredible values and holograms and things, and we see all these the possibilities are endless on how to reinterpret something and through abstract. But what is really hard now is to actually focus on what's important, which is, essentially for us, the play was what was important, the actual structure of the play, and to make an homage to how, you know, to a different side of the play, which is its structure and not the words.
Did you all have discussions as to Hamlet's relevance to today? I mean, it just seems relevant to the mid-20s. You know, you're talking about power, betrayal, intergenerational trauma, you know, the inner turmoil of Hamlet himself. I mean, it just seems like a show that we need now.
Well, I mentioned those themes because, yeah, to open up that question, because it's truly incredibly relevant now. I think the truth is the key in Hamlet, essentially, that everyone has their own truth. You know, all these people that follow your truth, well, it becomes a problem when your truth is wrong. You know, it becomes a problem when Mr., you know, with Sheldon Brennan Nameless, thinks his truth is the almighty truth. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it creates for non-discussions, it creates for politics, it creates for difficulties, it creates for corruption, because people try to get try to get away with it, or try to get around the rules. And, you know, so Hamlet essentially thinks he is the rightful owner to the throne. He has his truth, and Claudius has his truth, and all the other characters have to serve the power, you know. They essentially, even his best friends, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, they have no choice but to side with power. They have to side with the new king, even though he's perhaps a murderer. But at this point, just like what's happening now, it doesn't really matter what he's guilty of. Only what matters is that he holds the power, and mm-hmm. people want to be associated with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's certainly a lot to think about and a lot to bring in, I guess, when we go to the Playhouse here in Vancouver and see the show. Is this the right time for you to play Hamlet? I mean, I guess it would be a little different if you were 10 years younger or 10 years older, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because somebody was like, oh, how'd you find your dancers? And at some point I said, you know, and which is true, which is like we wanted dancers who were kind of close to the age of the roles they were playing. Mm. And then I was like, except me, I guess. Because I am too old to play Hamlet. In a way, but in another way, I think what it is the depth of character. I think you know, I think I spend most of my 20s and 30s playing princes. You know, where you know you meet the princess, you know she gets away for a bit, and then at some point you meet her again. In the end, everybody's happy, and you do double tours. It's not that simple, but the character is not that deep. Do you understand what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and then after playing a few different roles like Nijinsky and Onyegin, and then I sort of realized that that's really what I'm passionate about is playing characters and developing stories and telling stories. And so it came at a perfect time because also it came at a time when I could focus deeply on this character. And also it's a role that I didn't want to just do. You know, a lot of our shows that we do in dance and contemporary dance or in ballet, we'll do six shows in our whole careers. People don't realize that, but like if you do, I had the chance of doing Romeo like an insane amount of times, but you know, there's some ballets that come around in the rep, like Onyegin. I think I did seven shows in my entire career because they come every 4 years at the National Ballet, and you get two shows maximum each run because there's multiple casts. So, you know, how much of depth of character can you get in after doing, you know, you've only done seven shows in your whole career, and every 4 years you only do two. So, you know, that's what I admire for people in theater and people on Broadway is that they get to dive into these characters for months. You know, they get to do insane amount of performances, and they get to play it many times, and they get to do it in different ways. And so Hamlet was great because my company, Côté Danse, I created right there at the, you know, at the end of the pandemic, mm-hmm. And it just so happened that it's the first production of Côté Danse of that size, and then we were able to do it in a way that's tourable. It really kind of did great, and it hit a sort of, I guess, a nerve with people where it was great, where it kind of got a lot of interest. So we're at our 47th show tonight, and we keep touring, and we have another, I don't know, 35, and we've got a big tour of Asia next year. So it came at a time where I could really dive into that character in a way that I feel like, because I feel like for the first year I played it all wrong. I think I played it as an angry, kind of frustrated character, which he's kind of not. He's not frustrated, and he's not, well, he's frustrated, but he's not angry. He's just, you know, he's got all these different layers. So anyway, so all this to say that it came at a perfect time because I have the time, and it's my production with Robert, and it feels like I have the bandwidth to do it justice.
That's fascinating to think that even during the run, performing it as you are, you're learning something new about this guy.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, even Ian McKellen, who was recently at the National Theatre playing Hamlet, and, you know, he's in his, whatever, 70s, and he was saying, you know, that the same type of thing. He was like, why are you still playing it? He's like, well, I feel like I'm getting better at it. it's true. It's a character that is on, it's a character difficult to play as well because people have expectations, and it's a really tough character to play. It embodies so many different things. He's clever and he's charming, but at the same time quite a terrible person for kind of using people the way he does with Ophelia and all of that. So he is, he's an interesting character, and there's a reason why the character lives on.
I saw a documentary about you years ago. This was, I guess, during Nijinsky. And the thing that I always remembered from that and thinking of you as I'm preparing for our chat today is that you probably have a high pain threshold, do you?
I think so. I think I have a high pain threshold. Physically, and also, I like challenges. I like things that take me out of my comfort zone. And same as kind of the Nijinsky was something that was, really, really difficult to, that was really difficult physically. And it came at a time in my career where I was at the peak of my physicality. So it was a really wonderful challenge. This one, my physicality is different. I think that's what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm an older guy. Also, it's my production. And it's also Rabaio's sort of, approach was that the body and the physicality and the choreography, often choreography gets very overcomplicated very fast in contemporary dance or in, Haber was sort of very adamant that the production needed to be simple enough to have the character come through and that every movement would be infused with meaning and with purpose as opposed to, dancing a role or something that would be more virtuoso or would be more show-off kind of thing, yeah.
The other thing I've always wanted to ask you is what do you listen to as you warm up every night?
You have good questions.
Thank you.
I listen to a lot of different things. I've been listening to the Daft Punk Tron soundtrack for, like, years. Oh. I don't know why. It's sort of a random thing. There's also Metallica. I always listen to Metallica. I don't know why. I was always sort of like into Master of Puppets for different reasons. And somehow I don't listen to it any other time. And I would never listen to it just like randomly like this anymore. But before shows, sometimes I just need it. And then often what I'll do I do meditation. Like I do a meditation about an hour before. I'll sort of put on this sort of nidha and kind of try to not fall asleep, but kind of relax my body and everything. But then from nidha to Metallica to Hamlet.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable range there that you're going through just before curtain.
It is. And I think, there's something about this, the dynamic kind of courage, I think. And that's what I keep saying to when people are like surprised or my dancers or something, that I listen to some like heavy music or something right before going on. And I did that when I did The Prince of Sacred Beauty as well. Like it's not because it's Hamlet, but I think it's because I feel like I need courage. Like I feel so scared every day. Like every time I go out there, you doubt yourself, you feel insecure, and you get a little like, oh, no, can I do this? And so bringing on that type of music gives you a little bit of this like, no, this is good, this is it, I'm going out there and I'm gonna do what I can, and yeah, it motivates me a little bit.
So we're about the same age. I think there's about 6 months between us. The thing that we grew up in the same era, and I've always wondered, because of the part of the country you're from, that's a largely hockey place, right? I mean, boys our age were probably encouraged to do sports or hockey probably more than an artistic pursuit, say, and certainly not ballet. Well, what do you tell young people who are interested in ballet, who are worried about, say, being bullied? Because, I mean, you experienced that early on, right?
Yeah, I mean, there was an ignorance to, it was something people didn't know where I grew up. So doing ballet was essentially, it was very threatening for a lot of people. It was also very associated with women and tutus and ballerinas and pink. And so, so I got beat up many times growing up. And it was really weird because I never really questioned whether or not I should do it. I just wanted to do it and I kept doing it, but it was really not socially accepted. Although I was a hockey player, too, at the same time. I was, like, in a hockey team, and, I was really flexible. So I was a goalie, and they loved it when I did the splits because they would psych out the other team, and I could show off that I was a good goalie because I was flexible.
Yeah.
But it was really a crazy thing because it felt like I was really doing something that they didn't understand at all. Now, I would say to young people, the best thing is that so much is available, and so many groups are available, in a sense that online, and you can find your passion, you can really, research it, and you can find people even in your area, wherever you live, I'm sure, who have the similar interest than you do, and surround yourself with people who have the same interest as you, in a sense. Like, if it is ballet, I think it's a really wonderful thing to, you know, just find the right people you want to, you know, that will help you develop this passion. I was lucky because there was a lot of people around me that helped me develop dance, and that's the only reason why I ended up becoming a ballet dancer, is because, not because I really wanted it, but because the people around me were really open to helping me. And, you know, it takes a village. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's surrounding yourself with people, and then if people around you are not also completely supportive, then it's educating them, and there's a lot of tools now with what's online, and there's so many beautiful things online, and productions and education and about ballet and about dance. So I think the world has changed in a very wonderful way for that, because I think the only thing, though, as a young dancer, though, that I can say, it's the one thing in life that you can't just post things on Instagram and hope to get better at it. Mm. You know, it's yeah. insanely difficult, and it's really hard, and it's every day. I just listened to a couple of amazing athletes from the Olympics saying this really wonderful thing about sports, that it doesn't lie. Sports, you have to wake up every day, and you have to do the training, and you have to keep doing the training, and there's no shortcut. There are no ways of becoming famous or for just, you know, being good at posting you at a certain angle in a video, or, you know, tweaking things to get a viral thing, and it doesn't work. If you want a career in dance, you just need to put in the work and be passionate about being in the studio and, you know, in training, and stay humble and train every single day, and, you know, and you keep your head in the game all the time, in the art, you know, of it.
The last thing I'll ask you, Guillaume, before I let you go, you've worked everywhere throughout the world, and you could have lived anywhere. You could have moved and been a success in the United States or in Europe or Asia even. What kept you in Canada all these years?
Karen Kane, I think. You know, I had the greatest director. She was amazing, and for me she was incredible because she gave me the... She gave me all the freedom to go away. And that let that be sort of like, I let that be a lesson to me as a parent, you know, because she gave me freedom. She gave me this freedom to go away, to explore whatever I wanted. And she also, you know, helped me at home. She gave me some amazing roles. She helped support me as a choreographer. She helped me, you know, she helped me with so many different things in my career. She was always so generous. Of course, she was managing a whole organization, so... She did what she could always, and I really always knew that. So whenever I got offers from London or for New York to move and to take another contract, I was always like, but why would I, though? Also, I'm Canadian. I love Canada. I believe in Canadian artists. I believe in Canada. And I believe that there should be more Canadians in Canada working, you know, and I think it's not always the case. I think a lot of Canadians leave, and I think a lot of, you know, then, you know, a lot of naturally it sort of happens that way. And I think, you know, it's not always better somewhere else. Sometimes at home is pretty damn good. And I have to say, I'm probably, you know, living proof that you can stay in your country and be appreciated. And I'm really, really happy I did. And I feel that I'd like, and now that I'm sort of creating my company and I have these projects, and I'd love to stay within the field in Canada, I feel like I made the right decision for me, because I also feel like, you know, there's no such thing as a, you know, that people say, would you want to be a bigger fish in a small pond, or, you know, a small fish in a big pond, but I don't think there's any ponds. I think it's a matter of choices. I think it's a matter of, you know, the Canadian art scene is a very big pond, but it's a matter of, you know, whether or not you want to be relevant here, or you want to live in New York, or where do you want to live personally in your personal life. And, you know, even if people want to believe that the arts are more advanced in London or more advanced, they're not. They're just different. It's just a different place. We have our thing here. We have our identity. We have our depth of work that we have, and we have a depth of artist. And I'm really happy to be contributing to the Canadian art, you know, the sort of landscape. And I'm always been happy to live in Canada. And I hope I can continue to live in Canada and to, you know, obviously there might be opportunities in the future for touring and for directing or for other things out abroad, but Canada too, I think, is a huge potential. There's potential for dance and there's potential for more, some more artistic sort of DNA within our communities. So I'm curious to know how it will evolve and how I can help.
That's so well put, and long may it continue. Guillaume, I so appreciate your time today. I guess I don't tell a dancer to break a leg, do I?
Well, you know, maybe merde is better.
Merde, okay. We'll look forward to seeing you in Vancouver. All the best.
Okay, thanks very much.
The website for tickets and information is at dancehouse.ca. Guillaume Côté, the choreographer and star of Hamlet, Prince of Darkness, join me on the line from Ottawa in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.